Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Get up again and smile. Get up again.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you doing, sir?
Fine, Mr. Allen. Beautiful day here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, if you will. Some are still sleeping. Others are just beginning to wind down from, you know, nights of partying and et cetera. And then, of course, we have... Don, we here in Minnesota have a new approach and a new dimension, if you will, of drive-by shooting. You know, we always equate a drive-by shooting as, you know, a passenger car with, you know, gunmen hanging out of the windows and et cetera. We have taken it to another level, my brother, in our beloved
Shangri-La.
And last night around 1:20 a.m. Central Standard Daylight Time, major gun battle in downtown Minneapolis. That seems to be a frequent announcement. And gunmen exchanged gunfire. And then a couple of the gunmen jumped on a party bus, which had some 60 citizens on the party bus. You know, they're partying, drinking, and having fun and do whatever you do on a party bus. And the other side, if you will, like in the tradition of Tombstone and Abilene and Dodge City and et cetera, got in their automobiles, some actually running on foot. I mean, it's kind of like, ooh, you know, Beirut, if you will, you know, back in the day, opening fire and et cetera. And as an outgrowth of what happened, the bus family was stopped by the State Highway Patrol. Our poor police department is just so undermanned, even though we spent big money, part of that money that the Minneapolis Foundation, headed up by a former mayor of the city of Minneapolis, received, $20 million. But we just were undermanned, and so finally what happened somewhere on Glenwood, you know, where Glenwood is in North Minneapolis, the bus finally was stopped by the highway patrol and et cetera. And let's see, here's what they took off of the bus. First of all, they took at least 8 people who had warrants. Five guns, if you will. And then there was an individual who had been shot in the chest, though the media just minutes ago said non-life-threatening. But you know, Don, you were in the armed forces, work with the paramedics, if you will, at Fort Lewis, Washington. Any shot to the body mass is a problem. So that individual is in the hospital. A second individual who actually demanded to get off the bus, he was in so much pain from a gunshot wound to his foot, if you will, right there at the 1200 block on Glenwood Avenue, North, if you will. He is hospitalized, but apparently there may be a fugitive warrant for him. So anyways, that's the way we're doing it now. We use the party bus as part of the gangbanging and et cetera that's taking place. We tried to put a call in to Sasha Cott, who's the head of the newly created Office Against Violence, if you will. I know they had just returned from New York City about a week and a quarter ago, where they received training in how to deal with gun violence. You know, we hear a lot of that, Don. In fact, we kind of tease each other with regards to that. That's a favorite saying now in our beloved Shangri-La, stop gun violence, if you will. A lot of meetings this past week. The chief of police had at least 2 meetings in North Minneapolis talking about the gun violence in the city. But anyways, that's the update. So we have taken drive-by shooting to a new level. So I just want to introduce you to that, Mr. Allen. And that is now the use of a bus. By the way, there were 60 people on the bus in total, if you will. As we said, numerous warrants and et cetera. So just wanted to update on that, Don. And with a beautiful evening coming up again this evening, you know, no telling what kind of exercise. Oh, by the way, this kind of wasn't reported. Apparently some of our top journalists missed the report. They probably spent too much time plagiarizing the news. We had a shooting at Merlin's Drugstore, which has become legendary for shootings, fatalities, woundings, and et cetera, on Wednesday evening, late Wednesday evening. Unfortunately, a decision was made not to report that. So that was the shooting, and then to the two shootings last night, if you will, in downtown Minneapolis. But again, I want to emphasize, Donald, that we here, in fact, it's kind of like it used to be the theme, the Minneapolis sound. You remember that? You were a younger man coming up.
Yes, used to talk about the
Minneapolis sound, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now we've got Minneapolis Carnage, okay? The Minneapolis Carnage. And we now use, in place of the stagecoach, we use the party bus. So I'm just passing it on to you, Bub. So that's what's happening up here. It is out of control. I say that. But anyways, what else do we have, Mr. Hall? Some calls have come in. People are puzzled by yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune front page, above the fold, under the signature of the Star Tribune. It's heading, and people are going to ask us to explain how it is that we're plagiarizing information from the Star. And I had to explain to them that was the July 5th paper of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, that our presentation and information came 6 days earlier.
The toxic brothers.
Go ahead, Don. Go ahead.
It's funny that you bring that up, because I read the article, and almost word for word, the article in the Star and Tribune is what we talked about last Saturday and the Saturday before, basically. And the Ron and Don show got zero credit for distributing that information to the reporter that I always tag whenever we have a show.
And you're talking about LaMorris Janey of the Star Tribune? Yes.
He didn't go as far as... Yeah, and I'm reading the story, and I'm reading the story, Mr. Edwards, and then I go back and I listen to our last two programs. And, one was an hour, and then the one last week was 90 minutes. Like, this one is 90 minutes also, and I'm like, he didn't get that from our show. So why aren't we getting credit for it? I mean, again, that's more lazy journalism from Star Tribune.
We're colored guys, Don. Yeah. We're colored guys. The colored guys don't. If it was not a white journalist that broke the story, quote unquote, or a white media outlet, then you don't get no credit, man. And that happens really all across the country. Go ahead.
And Mr. Edwards, I think the Star and Tribune and that reporter, for listening to the show, writing the story, using our content, should send us each a gift certificate to J.D. Hoyt's or to Monte Carlo. Okay, we need some.
I like that. Okay. I like that. We can have steak, shrimp, and they're outstanding catfish, and et cetera. I think they owe that to us, because they should.
We're not asking for a lot, Just if you're going to use our news source to write a story from something we said word for word in our broadcast, you should at least give credit. This is the second time, Mr. Edwards, in less than 2 months, that the Star Tribune has done this to someone. Now, if you recall the stories about Congresswoman Ilhan Omar and marrying her brother, allegedly, blah, 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 there was a reporter at Alpha News, and she's a great research reporter. Her name is Priya Samsadar, and we did a radio show for iHeartRadio a while back, and Freya was the original person who investigated all this and wrote the story and published it, but Star Tribune ran with it, Mr. Edwards, and didn't bother to even mention her name one time.
Left
so this
her in
is the
dust.
Thing with them.
Left her in the dust.
Left her in the
You're
dust.
Absolutely correct.
They should give her a gift certificate, too.
We asked for that. If that's absolute, we can go down to, like you said, either J.D. Hoyts or the Monte Carlo. For our worldwide listening audience, again, worldwide and domestic, those are two top-of-the-line eateries, cafes, if you will, both proclaim to have the best steaks along with Murray's, which has been here for 70 years and is proclaimed. But they have the best steaks, if you will, entrees and et cetera. You know, and I think that that's absolutely fair. I think that that's fair. Repeat her name again, Donald, so that
her,
the world
her
knows
name is
who
Priya
she is.
Yeah, her name is Priya Samsudar. She worked for Alpha News, and she has uncovered so much political stuff that we are just now seeing in the mainstream media here in the Twin Cities, but yet you don't see her name mentioned anywhere at any time. And I think that's very disheartening because, you know, she basically did the Star and Tribune's work for him, in my opinion. And it used to be a time, Mr. Edwards, in the Fourth Estate, we're talking about 25, 30 years ago, if you were an average citizen or you worked for a smaller news outlet, the big papers were glad to give you credit. But also, it was a path to maybe even working for that newspaper. You know, working for the, you got your shot. Hey, this reporter was great. She did all this stuff. We need to have her on board. But because of her political affiliation on the right, like her buddy here, Don, you know,
I understand, Mr. Allen.
You know, they don't want that, you know, and you do need to be objective when you're reporting news. And we know already that, you know, it's one-sided. It's always been one-sided. And, you know, not much is going to change until Glenn Taylor releases ownership to someone a little bit bigger. And with that, we can move on.
Well, let me just say for Mr. Taylor, the owner, sole owner, majority owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, I don't know, he needs to take a look at there and, there's been a big change, by the way, in the personnel of his Minnesota Timberwolves. The new individual who came in, who they say is Latino, fired 14 people last week. Fired 14 people, a significant number of them African Americans, though don't have any problem keeping the African Americans on the basketball court making money. Yeah, and with all this free agency going on in the NBA, it's going to be better balance this coming season in the NBA. But I know Ben knew him well, if you will, knew him when he was spending a lot of time with the wife of a late athlete, if you will, the beloved Kirby Puckett. But Glenn's a great guy, but he really kind of needs to take a look at some of his smaller operations, such as the Star Tribune. And et cetera. In the case of those of us on the left, Mr. Allen, I guess it's a combination. It's the same thing with you on the right. It's not only your politics, but in our case, it's the color and shade of the skin. Because really, the Star Tribune hasn't had a top journalist since the late and beloved Carl Rowan, a Pulitzer Prize winner, left. My God, Don. 50 years ago, you were in nursing school when Carl Rowan used to write some heck of an articles for the Minneapolis Star Tribune and et cetera. But anyways, we're moving on. The phone lines are open, if you will. A lot of things are going on. We had an incident in the parking lot of the Cub food market there on West Broadway and Lindale, same place where there was the shooting Wednesday night, by the way.
Yes.
And a lot of drug activity going on, but a controversy. Don, maybe you can give us, our worldwide listening audience, a little bit more understanding, because a elected public official, black, if you will, has accused Minneapolis police of aggressive and excessive force. Key words, excessive force. I'm kind of puzzled. He has indicated that a black police officer threatened him and pulled his gun on him and etc., though the video does not reinforce that or confirm that. But what the heck was that all about? Was the park commissioner? Was he doing police work? Though the park police has, by law, a small 27-member park police, same full authorities as the police and the sheriff and et cetera. But what was Mr. French, I mean, what was he, I wonder what he was really doing in the parking lot.
Well, Ms. Edwards, from the story that I've read and his Facebook post, you know, Londell French is a park board commissioner for the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board, and he saw police officers pulled behind a vehicle, and he wanted to watch and see what was going on. Officer came up to him, a Minneapolis Park police, and Sergeant Tyrone.
No, we have to be hold down. We got to be absolutely distinct. Officer Barnes is a Minneapolis police officer, not Park
Minneapolis,
police. There were no Park police around. Yes. Want to be correct, but there were three officers
and
there, two white and
Mr. Bird.
Officer Barnes works as also security for Cubs. So we want to be concise in case we receive any inquiry. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I guess so he pulled behind this vehicle, this white truck, to kind of watch and see what the Minneapolis police was doing, more specifically this Officer Bars. And he asked him, Bars approached Mr. French's vehicle and asked him to move, and I'm paraphrasing here, and they got into a back and forth, and the officer said, hey, you know, don't be simple, while laughing at him. And I guess he didn't know who Mr. French was, but it was the same officer has been involved in some costly suits with the city of Minneapolis. He was promoted to sergeant in 2017, and Minneapolis has already paid out $317,000 in past cases involving this officer. So I guess he's looking for a fight, and this week alone, the Ways and Means Committee, Minneapolis, supported a $62,000 settlement for someone for a Hector Avacito, who was beaten unconscious by this particular officer. So there are some problems here, and I'm just saying that Londell French, Commissioner French, is pretty lucky that this guy did not snap on him. But there was a back and forth, and there's postings all over social media and what's going on. But, you know, this is like you said, both sides, the shooters and the law enforcement, are getting out of hand here in Minneapolis. And
it's
interesting.
Now, I, in fairness, have to say that, of course, there's two sides to every story. And there also in that piece that you read, which came out of the article, which was written by, the same person who was a friend of the Dot and Ron program, the Boris Janey, the only black male reporter they have at the Star Tribune. Let me just say this, Don. Let's just get our thoughts together on this. We have a situation. Videotape shows, and well, there's witnesses who were shopping at the Cubs facility, which is a very, very large, Supermax food store, that the individual in the white truck had been operating back and forth and selling drugs. By the way, let's be very fair now to the MPD on this one, is that drugs were found under the front seat of the white truck. In fact, it was an African-American mother with her children putting her groceries in the car that made the 911 call, that she had been approached to buy some dope, if you will. That wasn't her thing. And so the way it went was a squad was dispatched, a black and white, as we called them, with two officers, two white officers, as I understand it, was detailed and sent to the Cub facility. Now, they were aware, their information on their quote-unquote computer showed that there was a Minneapolis police officer who, by the way, has been working there for, I don't know, about 5 years as in a role of security, Sergeant Barnes, that they approached him, let him know that they were on the property and that there was a felony situation going on. They then went over to that part of the parking lot. You know, the Cubs not only is a large store, they have a big, big parking lot right there on West Broadway, and were asking the individual, African-American, to exit the truck. He did something that was kind of dangerous, Tom. We got to be fair. He wouldn't show his hands, and he was busy up under the seat. You know, in some situations, some jurisdictions, he could have had, you know, taken one to the head kind of thing. But the officers initially did draw their revolvers, but then they holstered their revolvers, but not the black officer. He never drew his weapon, according to the testimony, but the Internal Affairs of the Minneapolis Police Department is going to investigate the case. But what happened was actually Mr. French brought his car up a little closer than the back. In fact, he kind of put his car in between the officers and the suspect, which is a dangerous situation because they're trying to get the individual to show his hands and exit the truck, quote-unquote. At some point, Mr. French, you know, this is kind of interesting. I know it was a hot day, and et cetera, and Mr. French had all of his windows rolled up, you know what I mean? And he really didn't see the black officer approach him. Black officer signaled to him to roll down the window. He refused to roll his window down. I kind of wonder about that, Don, you know, with that heat and everything out there. So I assume he had his air conditioner on, right? He couldn't have been doing anything else. Yeah. I mean, you know, not like he'd have rolled the window down and smoke would have come from inside the car. So anyways, he seemed to waste a lot of time, Mr. French, Commissioner French, gave him his proper title, and he then indicated that he took his cell phone. You know, he had one of those real state-of-the-art cell phones. Mr. French, by the way, is employed by one of the big unions, as you know, as a organizer. I think he makes about $80,000 a year. So he took his time. He said he was, you know, photographing the officers and the later-to-be-arrested felon or charged with a felony. Now, here's the problem, Don. Just want you to, you know, so we're absolutely clear and fair because we may get a couple of calls. And by the way, as Mr. Allen has said, we're going an hour and a half. He said he was taking pictures of the officers and the suspect. The only problem is the suspect didn't get out of the truck for quite some time. And by that time, Sergeant Barnes and the commissioner, Commissioner French, we're having some exchange, and you're right. You're absolutely right. What's in the article, the word simple, you know, and simpleton was in play. But I know that the Internal Affairs Unit will investigate this with due diligence and come back with a finding for the chief of the department, and we will find out. Now, Mr. French has had some problems himself. I mean, we need to be there. A couple years ago, before he was elected a commissioner, security was called on him at the Minneapolis City Council meeting. And I guess he really went wild. There is video of the particular incident, if you will. Elizabeth Glidden, you remember her, former councilwoman from the 8th Ward?
Now held by the
council member Jenkins. She now holds that seat. Had to actually push the security button that got there, you know, in the console, and have security alerted. They thought this was going to take Brother French out of there. Kind of caught people off guard because he was wearing a Minneapolis Public School T-shirt. You know, we talked about him. In fact, we tried to get him on our program. If I'm not mistaken, I think he turned us down because he was involved in a situation in which a white supremacist, a little young white supremacist who was at school, Harrison, actually knocked Mr. French unconscious. You know, that's on video too.
Oh.
It's so people call, be careful, because the little neo-Nazi had injured three people, including Mr. French. He had broke the nose of a white female teacher a couple weeks before he co-cocked Mr. French. But then a gentleman by the name of Mr. Dudley, a Liberian citizen, beloved up there at Harrison, in fact has only the use of one hand, was beaten almost to death by the supremacists, if you will. And if there were a question about some reports that were to have been made available as opposed to the incident with now Commissioner French, if you will, and a former employee of Nass Public Schools. And for some reason or other, he never filed that complaint. And boy, there was a lot of conversation about that. So, I mean, you know, there's kind of enough to go around, but when we know at the end, that, I mean, what the heck? You know, Internal Affairs will make its determination. It will review and make its recommendation to the chief of the department and the chief of patrol, if you will. And we'll kind of find out about it. But as you said, my brother, a lot of criticism of the officer, who, by the way, was involved in 2015 in the arrest. Now, you know you get yourself in trouble on this one. In the arrest of a couple of, you remember Black Lives Matter?
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Lives Matter. And he made an arrest at Barrett Cubs of a couple of high-profile Black Lives Matter. So that led to some of the attacks on social media with regards to Sergeant Burns. And so this thing is kind of hot. But we can't, Don, we can't even begin to keep up with this stuff because we've got real controversy, and we need to touch on it, Don, if we want to just take a minute. I don't know how many people have actually been murdered by contract as it pertains to the death of Susan Steller, if you will. And maybe you want to just update our worldwide listening audience on what that situation is about, because that's what the Star Tribune kind of plagiarized on us, because we had quite a program last week and week before about that tragic death on, when was it? Oh, July 15th, 2015. The death of a beloved woman, a good friend, Donald, former council president and longtime council member Barb Johnson, if you will. So, I'm interested in how this story that came out yesterday morning is going to tie in with the investigation going on, because you know that 18-year-old African American who was 14. And I think you should share with us your reflections, because I concur about the kind of brutality a 14-year-old could allegedly impose, if you will. But with the death of another individual whose life was taken because he had created problems for drug dealers in North Minneapolis, I'm not understanding what the heck is going on. You know what I mean? Just trying to get my hands and mind around just how much violence and volatility that we have in our communities right now, Dom.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you, Mr. Edwards. And if you read the story, and I appreciate everyone watching on Facebook Live. We're live streaming this also, Mr. Edwards, from Blog Talk Radio to Facebook Live.
Yes, I can see.
I just posted the link up there to the Star Tribune story, that question of motives persist in 2015 slaying of Minneapolis activists. The challenge I have with this is, you know, how can they show intent with a 14-year-old boy and the brutal way that this woman was murdered? On the other hand, if you read the story again, you'll read that a group of clergy said they would, you know, grab this person, and this person left town and might be in Chicago or somewhere. And then another narrative is that that this person was in Chicago and that a gang hit was put out on him and this person was killed. But again, Mr. Edwards, as I said in our production meeting, I'm having real issues with a 14-year-old boy at the time who happened to be her next-door neighbor whose little sister used to walk her dog.
Her greyhound dog.
What would be the motive of a 14-year-old kid to go into this woman's house and brutally, brutally murder her?
And I don't know. That's a question. By the way, do you know, realize who his attorney is, who's been on our program a couple times in years past? The individual who, and he's handling a couple high profile cases, and he's the lead attorney in a trial that's going to get started here in October in the death of a young African American at the hands of the police. That trial is supposed to start in October, and the attorney there has had a couple of high profile cases. And here's the word, Don. I mean, we just say, the purpose of Donnie and Ronnie, as we refer to sometimes, is to get the news out. I'm understanding, Don, at this hour, as we talked about it last week on the Don and Ron program, in which, of course, no reflective credit was given. The county attorney, our good friend, and by the way, congratulations, he's back. He's back at work. Mike Freeman, who had to take some time to kind of dry out from some alcoholic problems, which we talked about, is back. And, in fact, he was at the press conference when the announcement was made that a 18-year-old African-American, 14 at the time, that he is going to be charged with the murder of Ms. Sellers, he was making the announcement of the arrest and et cetera. But here's what's happened, Don, since we were last on the air a week ago. The county attorney, after receiving information, see, you kind of touched on, by the way, I have to say now, to clarify, there's no reference in the article in yesterday morning's newspaper about Chicago or the young man that detectives were saying they couldn't find. I guess they couldn't find him because he's dead. but anyways, the county attorney is now saying that they were kind of blindsided, kind of sounded like the argument they got into with the Minneapolis Police Department about the Mohammed Noor situation, that information is being withheld. Now, Don, everyone is saying they didn't know that the young man, though not by name, but by to some degree age, identified in that article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. This wasn't Donnie and Ronnie putting out bad information. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, you called back up the tapes of last week's program. But what is being said now is that the county attorney was not made aware of a additional murder connection, if you will, and that the young person, whoever they are, that is identified in yesterday morning, but not by name, but who is now dead, Mr. Patton, who is the attorney for the young man sitting in the jail waiting to be certified as an adult. Mr. Patton, Michael Patton, let's just lay it out for our worldwide audience. Mike Patton said something interesting, if I'm not mistaken, in the article in yesterday morning's paper. I'm looking here in the studio. He said you got to sometimes watch these attorneys. They're smooth. He said he'd have no comment because, remember what he said, it's right there in front of you, Don. He said there was other evidence that he was awaiting from the prosecution. You know what that was. Mike Patton has basically said, I need clarification from you folks based on the program of last week, that black journalists are saying that there is more to this and that there was a second murder ordered ordered by heavy hitters in Chicago and Minneapolis that the person identified as having, to some way or another, disappeared was ordered killed. And as it pertains to the seller situation. And so Mike Patton, listening, you're still tunes in, listens to the program. Mike Patton has told the county attorney, said, hey, I need all the evidence, you know. Because, boy, they really don't want to get up, though it's in juvenile, still in juvenile court. You don't want to get up in the court, be it juvenile or adult, and get into a TT contest, if you know what I mean, about obstruction and information being withheld. So we're breaking that story this morning here on the Don and Ron program from out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, that Michael Patton, the attorney of record, for whoever the individual is, because there was an attempt in the last couple of days to kind of leak a bogus name out there so that we would stumble over it. But I have to tell you, Don, looking out for the team, looking out for the team, ain't playing that game. Yeah. So, you know, any questions anybody might have, I do understand that we will probably have a call coming in from our guy, Steve, there in the Midwest. They're puzzled by why it is that we received no recognition or acknowledgement for actually first breaking the story. We're now breaking even more that there's a problem
and Mr.
Edwards, with the prosecution.
Let's take that call from Steve from the Midwest, who's actually live.
Oh, okay,
right
we got
now.
Him
call,
online. All right.
Caller,
okay,
go ahead.
Good.
Steve,
good
go
morning.
Ahead, sir.
Yeah, good
morning,
gentlemen.
Sir.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to read something real quick. It said, it's a definition, take the work or an idea of someone else and pass it off as your own. I wonder what's the definition of? Is that maybe plagiarize or something? Or I'm kind of
journalistically, in the world of journalism, the term is the appropriate term, plagiarize.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of wondering how the Star Tribune in the article yesterday took your show, basically put your show in their article, gave you no attribution whatsoever. So
what was that word again, Steve?
Attribution. No credit. They didn't give you any credit.
No credit. A recognition of
the hard
work.
Did not cite their source.
Yeah. Well, my general question would be, what's the state of journalism there in Minneapolis right now? I don't get that.
If you're a person of color, if you're a black African-American, and you break a story, as my colleague, Mr. Allen, said a couple minutes ago in first reading and evaluating the article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, which, by the way, really was much more enhanced than the article first written a week prior, back around the 26th of June, if you will. I was amazed by how much research the Star Tribune must have done. Let me just say a couple things, because we've got a lot of time here this morning. Mr. Allen has made sure that we have an hour and a half program in our you know, negotiations with Blog Radio. But the piece about the sister of the young man now being held in the Hennepin County Jail was a piece that was not previously put in the paper. And I'm pretty much aware of where that information came from, which, by the way, I know that Mike Patton would be very, very interested in that. The reference to the sister of the young man being held in the jail it was a young lady who had a very close friendship with the deceased, the second deceased is a young African American who was ordered executed after being lured to Chicago, which, by the way, that's real danger. And I'm going to get back to the article, because you got to be careful when you deal with the feds, when you take a person across state lines for the purpose of entry, murder, and et cetera, or execution, because that is a capital crime under statutory acts here in the United States. You can be charged with murder in the first degree and could be tried and executed. And that's the law as it pertains to the federal. And I'm quite sure Mike Patton, the attorney for the young man, is certainly going to continue to raise questions to our good friend, Steve, the county attorney, who's back now. You know, he's back fresh, he says, ready to go to work and et cetera. Well, he's got a job. Now, the piece on the walking the dog, let's do it like that, that had to come from people assigned to the homicide unit and the case, okay? You cannot, or you're not supposed to, get any of that information out of the records because what? The young African-American is still being held as a juvenile and, in fact, is still, quote-unquote, the property, if you will, of the juvenile court system here in Hennepin County in the state of Minnesota. So that in itself was interesting. That was a new feature that the Star Tribune did not have back on, what would it have been, the 26th, 27th of June, after the big press conference and et cetera. Secondly, we raised questions. In fact, you and I, Steve, had a kind of a back and forth with regards to the evidence that is at play, which identified the young man. There was a little bit more information in yesterday's edition of the paper, which, as an example, said that the young man was fingerprinted after he was arrested and just a couple of blocks away, allegedly, from where he used to live, which was next to the deceased, beloved of woman, Miss Sellers. He was arrested. He had a pellet gun and apparently tried to stick somebody up, according to the article written by Laportis Janey of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And he was then charged with a felony, which allowed, think about this, gentlemen, come on now, that allowed the police to fingerprint him. And lo and behold, they found a pink fingerprint. I imagine by the time this program ends, gentlemen, that it'll be, you know, a full hand, you know, both left and right, and et cetera, I guess. Only problem is that now you got to deal with if he knew the deceased, if he was involved, as my colleague Mr. Allen has talked about, if he was involved in the murder of himself, and if he was joined by others, if you will, there's going to be a real problem, okay? Because if he knew her well enough that he was doing also work for her around the shop that she also had a shop with artifacts and et cetera, that she was so beloved in the artist community. Clearly, she trusted the family, who, again, lived next door. Oh, by the way, in the first article, Steve, as we talked last week, there was no reference that the young man, now African-American, being held was a neighbor, right? Am I right, gentlemen? There was reference.
You are correct.
A lot of reference yesterday. Yesterday, good reference that he lived next door. And initially, they misrepresented the so-called confrontation because the confrontation at no point did the Star Tribune say yesterday involved the young man who is now in jail, not the one that was ordered, executed by drug dealers here in Minneapolis and carried out by their representatives in the city of Chicago. And so there was some additional information in the article yesterday. And it seemed that the family, and by the way, as I said earlier, we are being tantalized, at least people think that's what they were doing. Don, me and Don laughed about that, to go with some name that is incorrect so that the Ron and Don program can be attacked for incorrect information. And I think in talking with your people last night in preparation for this program, Steve, your people asked us about that. And we said that we know. Now I'll tell you something else. And gentlemen, and it's wide open for discussion on this program per se. All of a sudden, the portion of the article yesterday which talked about the ministers. Now, if I'm not mistaken, it was on this program, Steve and my associate, Mr. Allen, that exclusive information was brought forward by this program about ministers. In fact, you examined me, Steve, last Saturday when I made the statement that a group of ministerial and civil rights leaders had approached the very, very, very good friend, beloved friend of Ms. Sellers, and that was the then city council president, the well-respected Barb Johnson, okay?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, she was deeply hurt because no one from the ministerial group or the civil rights leadership ever told her until recently, and it was not them, that the individual who was the first prime target, who Ann Jose, Sergeant Ann Jose, who also happens to be the wife of the assistant chief of the police department, made the statement that they couldn't find. It's right there in front of you, gentlemen, if you will. Couldn't find the brother. Well, the word is they really didn't look for him because they knew he was dead. Now, why this thing got re-engaged back on the 26th, 27th, and this fingerprint thing that we talked about last Saturday, before the Star Tribune, the second edition, I don't know what was driving that, but now they got the county attorney in trouble again. They got to do a hell of a job of investigating, clarifying, and you can't have it both ways. And in this case, you can't have it either way. If they, you know, told the city of Minneapolis and the police, and by the way, gentlemen, I'm just going to be, I'm aware for those that are saying, well, what did you do? You know, Mr. Allen and I laugh because that's oftentimes the statement. What did you guys do? Well, when I became aware that a execution order, a death warrant had been signed, I did what any good citizen, even a black citizen, did. I contacted my local police department. So nobody has to bother wasting the time asking me that question. And I thought that, and that was 4 years ago. And so I just assumed that there was an intense search, particularly politically, during the time that Barb Johnson continued to serve on the city council and was the president of the city council. But I'm shocked, gentlemen, and open to any questions. I'm shocked to find out that there didn't seem to be the effort until the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation, assigned a cold case expert to work with his own department, giving him all the resources of the FBI to deal with this cold case. See, Steve, as I said to your people, we broke a number of cold cases here just in the last 12, 13, 14 days. You know, it looks like, you know, this department is definitely trying to get back in the good graces of the white community. And I don't know what they're trying to do for the blacks, you know. So I just need to get that out there, gentlemen, and because your questions that you're posing to me, Steve, have to be answered as we were required upon your examination last Saturday. And so any question on any part of what I've talked about in yesterday's article or any other observations you have?
Well, one question, I don't know if you're willing to do it yet, but are you willing to name the ministers and civil rights leaders at this time?
Not at this time.
Okay.
I would do such before a federal grand jury.
Oh, okay.
And just indicate that I was aware for quite some time. Later, my colleague, Mr. Allen, became somewhat aware, but I had been aware for 4 years that the individual first identified to me by sources both here and outside of Minnesota as the perpetrator, later to be ordered executed, if you will. I did my due diligence, okay? And so I'm not going to, you know, get myself out there with regards to folks who say that they are on top of all things that are happening, and particularly those that I think provided information that wasn't correct to counsel at that time, Council President Bart Johnson. That's you know, I was at the press conference, gentlemen, in City Hall a couple of days after the death of Susan. And I'd known then council member Johnson for many years, knew her mother, worked with her mother on issues of civil rights and et cetera. And I could tell and see the pain that Barb Johnson was feeling with the loss of her good friend, particularly given the brutality, and which is something that Mr. Allen has raised some serious questions about a 14-year-old having the capabilities and the competency in a negative way of the murder of Susan, if you will. I just think that there are too many questions that are unanswered. Now we're looking at actions that are predicated upon what is called, as you just said, Steve, plagiarism, if you will, and it's dangerous. But at some point, the ministerial group should have called and notified and asked for a meeting with the police department, though they may have with the police department, I don't know, but with Council Member Johnson at that time and said, we're not going to be able to deliver the person who is suspect of being the murderer, if you will, because that person has been ordered executed. Okay, that should have happened, and could have definitely cleared some things up. Now, I just want to go back, gentlemen, to what I have said in the last couple of minutes, that this has created now a problem for the prosecution. And with a sharp attorney like Mike Patton, if you're listening in, Mike, yeah, we understand. We know that you know the game. With him, and I asked you, Steve, to go back, take a look at that particular passage in Boris Janey's column yesterday, in which he indicated the statement by Mr. Patton's office that he is doing what, sir? Y'all have it right there in front of you, and I assume you do also with your staff there in the Midwest, Steve, said we are waiting. So the question that a community should ask, and et cetera, and hopefully certainly the parents of the young man who is now 18 years old, what additional information are you waiting on? You've been working on this case for 4 years, okay? Yeah. 4 years. Yeah. So what additional information is lacking, is absent, is not present for the attorney for the young man? Because I have to say, gentlemen, that there's some stalling going on in carrying out the decision to certify as an adult, okay? And I noticed in the paper yesterday, the writer for the Star Tribune obviously had been educated on the new laws here in the state of Minnesota with regards to juveniles and disproportionate sentencing and et cetera. So those are some of the reflections, Steve, there in the Midwest, that I'm having. Any question, any examination for either one of us, myself or Mr. Allen?
Well, I was just wondering about more physical evidence because they mentioned in that article that they were still trying to figure out what the nature of the relationship was between this young man and Ms. Spiller. And if you've got, they mentioned fingerprints, but if you live next door, and as you stated earlier, possibly did work for and the like, then wouldn't his fingerprints naturally be there at the scene?
I would have thought so, sir. I would have thought so. But then we're merely investigative reporters, Mr. Allen and myself, and we were merely investigating things, examining them, and et cetera. But, you know, I think that that's you know, an interesting point. Though I do think that initially there was thinking to come with a different approach, if you will. But the fingerprints thing sounded great. And the first article that the Minneapolis Star Tribune wrote, they actually serviced, if you will, a single theory by how they reported the first story. Now, what they reported, you know, 4 or 5 days ago, as opposed to what they reported yesterday, is the difference between night and day on another planet, if you know what I mean. I think that raises questions, but like I said, they have a dangerous attorney representing this young man, this young African American, who, because he's still in juvenile custody, though he's 18 years old, but he allegedly committed the crime when he was 14. A lot of information is being withheld. In fact, the paper went to great lengths, gentlemen, didn't it, yesterday, to let you know what the protocol is in any state, particularly the state of Minnesota, that the proceedings in the juvenile court are closed, both to the we just went through that with the media with Muhammad Nord, that both the court is closed, if you will, to both the public, which is kind of interesting, and the media, if you will. So there will be exchanges between, if Mr. Patton continues to be the attorney of record for the young African-American, we'll never know about it if you talk in terms of the poor quality of reporting. Now, I am told by some sources that an effort is being made as we speak to interview Bart Johnson. All right? Now, we all know, you asked the question, Steve, about, you know, is there some racial factors that come into play about the word of a person of color and with this newspaper, and there's no doubt about it, if you will. Mr. Allen and I have discussed it for a number of years. But former council president Bart Johnson is a Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And consequently, her word and any interview with her, which is supposed to take place as early as this coming Monday, is the gospel. I think that you would agree. What would be your thinking on that, Steve?
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, the fact that just the mere fact that you had a story last Saturday and now they're putting it out now, I mean, to me, that just seems strange. It sounds like they had to go around and try to back up what you said. Well, you're already the one to break the story in the first place. So it's like they didn't believe you or something.
Didn't want to believe us. I think they did not want to believe us, if you will, and particularly did not want to believe yours truly. I mean, like I said, I mean, I've known a quote-unquote the secret for 4 years, but that's the reason that I wanted to make sure on our program, Mr. Allen and myself's program, the Ron and Don program, that I am clear, absolutely clear and concise, that I carried out my due diligence. And by the relationship of Mr. Allen with Mr. Edwards, we carried out our due diligence. We tried to get the information out there. It was clearly being blocked, if you will. And as I said before, there's reason to believe at least for 2 years the case wasn't even being worked on. The FBI provided a trained individual in cold case who also happens to be a sergeant for the Minneapolis Police Department assigned to the homicide unit, if you will. I just think that there's going to be a problem, particularly, again, I've mentioned the name of Mr. Patton a number of times. With Mr. Patton, who has a history of big, tough cases, he's dealt with some hell of a cases, be it automobile accidents and all the way to assaults in Mankato, as an example, and definitely murder cases and et cetera. I would encourage anyone to go back, take a look at that quote attributed. It wasn't attributed by Don and Ron. It was attributed actually by the writer for the story and whoever else is now assisting him, if you will, that Mr. Patton said that he was awaiting other evidence, other information important to his what we call his case in chief. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I think that that's a capital reflection by the attorney. At least the young man is going to get some, you know, hopefully, competent legal representation, because it looks like to me, gentlemen, that the decision was being made to snowball this kid right into the penitentiary.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree 100% with you.
Okay.
I agree 100%. And Mr. Edwards, if I can, and Steve, listen to this. This is from the article from Laboris Jamie. And it's in the middle. It's a couple paragraphs. It says, authorities have released few details about how this attack played out. Police arrived at a grisly scene after responding to a report of a break-in at the home at the 5100 block of North DuPont Avenue. Early reports suggest that Spiller had been stabbed or beaten so badly that medical examiners was unable to determine the exact cause of death. An autopsy instead concluded that she had died of complex violence. Next sentence. Detectives interviewed and eliminated a number of suspects they pursued in the court case. Next paragraph. Investigators briefly considered a teenager with a long history of run-ins with the law. A few months after the murder, they were approached by a group of Northside ministers who convinced them someone may have been involved, and said that they can convince the teen to turn himself in. But detectives never located him, possibly because he left the state. Ain't that what we said, Mr. Edwards?
I didn't try to catch it. What did you say, sir?
I said that's what we said last week and the week before, right?
It sure is, and it is memorialized on demand, because this program has on-demand capabilities, and so everything is in the archives under the trusted authority of Mr. Allen, and we have it, technically in place. I cannot begin to tell you how taken back I was, gentlemen, yesterday when I was alerted that I needed to go read the Star Tribune, if you will, and to read that, because one of the things that is clear is that I know that the Star Tribune and Mr. Janey and them have been aware, that certainly I had been aware for 4 years, that information had been provided. And again, I use for the seventh or eighth time the term due diligence, and we all have the computers there, and Webster defines very well what due diligence is. But Steve has thrown a kind of a gauntlet down, and that is, you know, gentlemen, I mean, you know, particularly in your case, Mr. Edwards, I mean, is the word of an African American, of a black human being, relevant? And in this case, and far too many. Mr. Allen has talked about it. Steve, you have probed very hard us. Is that I call it, I can only speak for myself, I call it the Taney rule. It's the Judge Taney, the infamous judge in the Dred Scott case, who declared, and for all those that you know, got your computers and et cetera, all you got to do is call up Justice Taney and the Dred Scott case, which, by the way, came out of Fort Snelling, Minnesota. In which the good white judge talked in terms of the expectations and the value, if any, that white folks put upon the word of a Negro. That is what has happened. That is what has happened. So
yeah.
I said again, acting in under the guise of due diligence, I tried to, and later joined by my colleagues, did everything we tried to do. But see, we were up against something very interesting, that apparently some of the ministers were saying that they speak for justice. Okay? And so even some of our own made us irrelevant.
Yeah. Okay, Joan, I'm going to ask you.
Again, any additional question? We don't want to leave anything, but
no.
We think this is going to continue to gather, quote unquote, legal moss, if you will, you know. But I just wanted you and your team there in the Midwest to know that we had been due diligent. We definitely have been due diligent. That question was raised by your staff to me last night, and I said we had been absolutely due diligent. Absolutely. Ever made every effort. Contacted the people that we were supposed to contact, but, you know, as the first part of this conversation went, the decision was made in the words of Justice Cheney. Mm-hmm. There are no rights. There is no truth. You know, there is no venture that we, the white man, the white community, are duty bound and honor bound to respect as pertains to the Negro.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is, my friend. Anything else, Steve?
That's all. That's all. I appreciate it. And you guys are a tremendous resource for the community. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Ellen, go ahead. Do you have anybody holding?
We have no one holding.
Under pressure. We're under pressure here, you know.
We have no one holding.
That
number 347-426-3904. What's that, Mr. Edwards? I'm sorry.
No, I bet you people are still, you know, partying, maybe still partying on the party bus. Yeah. And let's so no one can say again that number, 347-426-3904. This is the Don and Ron program. What else we have on the agenda, Mr. Allen? Because there's a lot of stuff going on.
Well, we do have a caller. I'd like to get this caller in. Caller, you're live on the air, the Ron and Don Show. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is Mr. M. And
yes, sir.
I've been listening to your, you know, riveting program, always very educational. Things that you're not going to get in the Star Tribune, on the radio, WCCO, KSTP, for some reason, all the hundreds of reporters they have, we still can't get information. But what I wanted to just quickly say is, in listening and trying to digest this, it seems like here in Minneapolis, in the African-American community, we have no way to hit back. I mean, we continue to absorb blows, body blows, body shots, low blows, you name it. But we have no, I mean, our urban leagues, our NAACPs, our churches, they just seem to be just very weak on a hit back, which I think is what it takes to get some justice here. But I did want to ask you a specific question, though, about an organization, Black Lives Matter. Now, is that an actual organization? Is that, can you pay dues to it? Do they have a president? Are there chapters all over the country? Is there any information you can give me about that?
Yes. I'll take that, and if Mr. Allen wants to follow up if there's any piece of the walk down the hallway that we missed. Black Lives Matter was started by a couple of different groups in a couple of places, Chicago, the West Coast, Oakland, et cetera. It's interesting because Beyonce and her husband, was it 2 years ago, Mr. Allen? Yes, right after the events here in Minneapolis, the 4th Precinct, or P4 as they refer to, Beyonce and her husband made a gift of a tremendous amount of millions of dollars. There's a woman, you can find it on your computer, who calls herself the original founder of Black Lives Matter.
Alicia Garcia.
And there are chapters. You asked the question about chapters. There are chapters in certain places, and there's a chapter here in the Twin Cities. In fact, in the case of the 2-year-old baby that was shot and killed a couple of years ago, and that cold case was successful, and an individual, Mr. Welch, who is in a federal penitentiary serving 17 years, has been identified as the person that fired the shot that killed the 2-year-old baby a couple of years ago. But a gentleman by the name of the Reverend Danny Givens, from St. Paul, who was in the forefront in the days of the occupation, as they called it, of the 4th Precinct, happened to be with the family. In fact, Mr. Allen made some assessments and evaluations. He saw the live stream, and he can speak for himself. I don't think Mr. Allen was very impressed with the quality of what was happening, but they have dusted off Black Lives Matter and are back in play. Now, how much money a chapter receives, such as the one here in the Twin Cities, you'd have to ask them, and you'd have to ask the IRS, you know what I'm saying? But to your specific question, sir, with regards to Black Lives Matter and who they are a formal organization. Now, I don't know if they have a 501c3 or 4 or 5 or whatever, but they are an organization that periodically declares itself as being a functional group. Now, do they have a board of directors? Do they have an executive director, et cetera? It appears the titular head, is the sister in Chicago, Illinois, who was the recipient of a very large grant from Beyonce, the beloved Beyonce, and her her husband. What's his name? Puffy? Oh, yeah. So I hope that answers your question.
Well, I think so. But again, I you would think these organizations would come out, you know, when the community is being hit, and that they would be able to stymie some of the blowback. But I guess I don't know. It just seems like our institutions just are very, very, very ineffective. Where I see most of the other communities in the Twin Cities, I mean, you can name any ethnicity that you want in the Twin Cities, and they'll have a museum or a gathering place or something that identifies them as having a foothold of sorts in the city. And, well, I just don't see that in our fair city.
No, well, but I will have to say this to you, because you asked a question, and we are responsible here on the Don and Ron program to give clarification predicated upon evidence, information, et cetera. Since the involvement of them, of Black Lives Matter, in particular the Reverend Danny Gibbons, some of the Bleeding Hearts have indicated that, you know, that there's some $500,000, $2,000 here. Because in the case of the young baby, of the child, the little boy shot and killed, his sister wounded. I have to say this also. I was at the hospital and was in the ER when the final signal was given that the little baby, that the little two-year-old had died. I was there with a delegation, which included the then chief of police, the then mayor, and others, and there was a very powerful family, particularly the grandmother of the grandchild, the two-year-old, very powerful woman, really held that family together, if you will. In fact, she is in the picture that was in the Star Tribune a couple of days ago, showing the funeral 4 years ago, and et cetera. In fact, the 2015 was actually a very violent year. But they have picked up some money here in the last 6-7 days because they basically left the impression that they, you know, maintain boots on the ground, working closely with the police. Of course, in the case of the police, a sergeant by the name of Jensen. The officer is now being given credit for breaking Walsh. I guess while Walsh still is in the federal penitentiary outside of Minnesota. But, you know, people grab advantage. I mean, that was one of the things was being said by the ministers who are now being identified. We didn't identify them. We just talked about the ecumenical community in yesterday's paper. Those ministers, if you go back and take a look at the record, if former council president Barb Johnson decides to give an interview and talk in terms of her discussions with those groups, with the ministerial group and civil rights leadership, and if any reward was paid to them for services rendered, because technically when they first approached first the county attorney at that time, Stills County Attorney Mike Freeman, and then when they went across the street and met with Council President Bart Johnson, there was already discussion about remunerations, if you will, rewards, and et cetera. And as you saw in the Minneapolis Star Tribune yesterday morning, they said that they could deliver the original killer, if you will, and then, you know, the article fades, and they faded, and, you know, it didn't happen. And I think that's the reason that we're finding ourselves in trouble in the African-American community with regards to believability, you know, that we are people of our word. That's a fact. Now, I know, let me just say this to you, Em, any questions you have on that, feel free to ask Don and Ron, is that folks are now trying to pretend that it was never said that they had the name of the murderer. I'm not talking about the young man in jail waiving certification. I'm talking about the individual who was lured to Chicago and brutally murdered, and orders coming down that he needed to be purged, if you will. See, all these things happen, and yet, as we said in our conversation with the gentleman from, you know, from Kansas, is that when African Americans say that we have, you know, the same kind of knowledge as a good white investigative reporter, we are dismissed as simpletons, if you will, unreliable, no credibility, and et cetera. Yeah.
Very sad situation. But it, you know, on the other hand, though, it's hopeful that there are people that maybe are working behind the scenes. You know, maybe, you know, their identities and maybe the work they do is just not, you know, apparent. But, you know, let's hope that maybe they are, you know, working behind the scenes. I mean, that's one strategy also.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
In the name of justice.
Mm-hmm. One more quick comment, if I could, and that's I want to blast the person, and I want to blast the worst mayor of Minneapolis in my lifetime.
Oh,
and
yeah.
His name is R.T. Ryback, okay? Worst mayor in this city of all in my lifetime. And I say that because his legacy has been chaos and bike trails. And these bike trails have ruined our city. I mean, with all the construction going on, with all the roads shut, streets that I used to just drive up and down Portland and Park were just thoroughfares to get around the city. No more. Nicollet Avenue blocked up from Lake Street to the Diamond Lake. No more. But then you have bike lines, one or two lonely bike riders riding along the, and all the traffic is moved to the side for one or two lonely bike riders.
Right.
So I want to blast out to R.T. Ryback as the absolute worst mayor in my lifetime in the city of.
All right. Thank you, Em. Appreciate it. I hope to see you hear from you again. Thank you, sir. All right.
That was a salute to R.T. Ryback. Mr. Edwards, we have about 11 minutes and 21 seconds left.
Oh, lines are still open. Let us give the number again, 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. This is the Don and Ron program coming to you from Minneapolis, Minnesota, the great heartland of both courage, if you will, factual information, and good journalism, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Harris, I'd like to talk a minute about the court battle that ensued with the Minneapolis Urban League that's kind of been put on hush-hush by local news agencies. and supporters. I'm not going to take that long. Recently, a source contacted the Ron and Don show and says, did you know there was an alleged settlement with the Urban League? I said, no, what's going on? I went to the Hennepin County Court, civil court records, and found out that American Nursing and Tech, there was a case there, American Nursing and Tech versus the Minneapolis Urban League. And for those of you that want to see it that are on social media, I'm actually posting the link right now to the PDF that you can go and view. But what happened, this young lady here, I guess, ran a nursing program for CPAs out of the Urban League for a couple of years. And from what our source tells us, she was not paid. And she took Minneapolis Urban League. Yeah, she took the Minneapolis Urban League to court. And from what I understand, she was successful. The attorney in that case was Christopher William Boleen. And I've contacted Mr. Boleen. He has not returned my call. But I also contacted the president of the Urban League because, you know, we want to be fair here, not one-sided. And I asked him, would he come on the show today? That's Steve Belton, the president of the Minneapolis Urban League. I asked him, would he come on the show today to discuss this? And he said, thank you for the invitation to appear on the Ron and Don show. Unfortunately, I am unable to participate in your program. Please extend my greetings to your co-hosts and guests. Yours in the struggle, Stephen, is what he answered to my email requesting, because like you said earlier, Mr. Edwards, there's two sides to every story.
Yes.
And I've also requested that the head of the American Nursing and Tech in Cottage Grove, Minnesota, come on live on the air, and she has not gotten back to me just yet. But I appreciate it, and hopefully she will get back to me, and we can get to the bottom of this because, again, we're always talking about supporting black businesses and doing this and that, and it's really disheartening to hear that a black business allegedly was snuffed by a local black flagship agency. You know, and that's very hurtful, and is dismantling the economic structures for people to get ahead. So I did post a link to the actual court case. Minneapolis Urban League is the defendant, and the plaintiff is American Nursing and Tech out of Cottage Grove. And obviously, their Urban League represented themselves because they're a lead attorney at this pro se. And
that's right. But
the lady was,
does have a law degree. He does have a law degree. I don't know if he has a license anymore to practice law in Minnesota. But Mr. Belton is an attorney at law.
Mhm. Mhm. So yeah, and we're gonna see what's going on here. It's very interesting, but there's something wrapped around this. We have not gotten all the details yet, but we'd like to break it here first, so that the Star Tribune can pick it up and dive in, because you know they'll call the Star Tribune back right away. So
absolutely, and the Star Tribune will craft the right kind of story, for them.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, this is something that's kept from our community. You know, this information. You know, we're wondering why the Minneapolis Urban League, in our opinion, or in my opinion, and Mr. Edwards has his own opinion, but in my opinion, has not functioned at the level that it needs to function for the middle class in the Twin Cities or in the state of Minnesota. And it's a problem. It's a huge problem because we have issues in education, housing, economic development, job. I mean, just a variety of things where we don't hear a whisper, a press conference, nothing. And that's their job. It's not our job to do a press conference every time the police shoot up six or seven brothers, or six or seven brothers shoot up another six or seven brothers. That's not our job.
As they did last night in downtown Minneapolis. Yeah.
And so where is the calming effect? Where is the announcement? That's why you have all this hate, all these supremacists, right? Supremacists and all these people. If you listen to read some of the comments on these local newspapers, you know, they're wondering, too, you know, where's the representation? Where is the leadership? Where are these people that need to be there to discuss what we need to discuss and what we need to do to fix these issues? Because personally, I'm not interested in going to downtown Minneapolis at all whatsoever. because there's a high chance that you might be a victim of a ricochet and get killed, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I didn't serve in the United States military to go downtown Minneapolis with my wife and be shot by some dude that has no vocabulary or an education, but has a gun.
Yeah, so, right. But he has a gun and knows how to, at least knows how to fire it, even if that necessarily be accurate, but too many of these brothers and some sisters now are taught to what they call spray shoot. Just spray everything.
Yeah.
You know? That's how children and babies get killed. Also, let me just take the opportunity, we're going to run, that we are committed, particularly in light of the information coming back in the Sellers situation, we are committed, Mr. Allen and I are committed to attempt to reach out to Mike Patton and ask him if he will join us on this program at the point and time that his client, whose name is unknown to us, Mr. Allen and myself, made sure we didn't want to know the name. I didn't want to be, you know, put no trick by anybody. But we would ask Mr. Patton to join us to kind of give us an overview of what is a very, very, very high-profile murder case. And a young 18-year-old African-American who sits in a cell in a juvenile facility awaiting certification and then the beginning of the preparation to put him on trial for murder in the first degree. Because I assume, by the way, in murder in the first degree, that the county attorney will certainly is waiting to take this case to a grand jury to have the young 18-year-old African-American charged again, with murder in the first degree. So I just want our listening audience across the world to know that we will be attempting to reach the attorney who has been on this program a couple of times and who I know very well, Michael Patton, to join us and enlighten us with regards to what is happening here. Again, we have to use the sensational terms. A celebrated and tragic case in the case of Susan Sella on the, what was it, John? The 15 July, 2015. So that's what it is. And so we must be coming down to Brother James Brown. Some people have called me from outside of Minnesota and said, man, you guys sure know how to push that, man, that particular sequence of lines from Brother James Brown. I said, yeah, we work at our task. We work at our task.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Well, and wrapping up, good show. This was our – go ahead, Ms. Harris.
No, go ahead, because
I was just going to say that, this is a special 90-minute program. We appreciate everyone that tuned in and listened, and this podcast is available directly by clicking the same link that you're listening to and pulling up the show as well as our show page at blogtalkradio.com/ The Ron and Don Show. You have to put The Ron and Don Show in there after the forward slash, and you have access. The show's going back almost 10 years. That we've been on the air with no paycheck, by the way. But we've been doing this, and we keep doing it, and we'll be back next week. Any last words, Mr. Edwards?
No, just we're assuming that we'll have additional information to provide additional background, and I just don't think that the Susan Sella case and some other cases are just going to go away and evaporate. Not with the toxic brothers still around. Uh-oh, look out. Thank you, Don.
Uh-oh. Thank you.